this is approximately the time that I was working in Edinburgh. And what I'm going to say is really my view and my perception of things that I saw and worked on at the time I was here. So in and to help Graham, it's going to be very much an overview. So there's the overview. most of my time was actually at KB, although when I first came here, I actually did start in the medical school doing image analysis and a little bit of computational fluid dynamics on heart valves. And I'll mention that Brian Gilmore worked with me at that time, and so did Bill Lane. I think John Murison as well, but I'm not absolutely certain about that. However, what I really was aware of was that in my dealings and talking with people in computer science and the computing center, and at that time I sort of moved into being a bit more involved in the management side of that as part of the user community and was on various committees. And what I really was aware of was that, following on from what Tommy was saying, that both he and Sid really led a very strong policy of making computing pervasive within the university. And I just mentioned a few people that I knew and worked with at various times, on various committees, including people like Tom Moore, who did quite a lot of work in geography. Tom, unfortunately, no longer with us. And there's Tony Cox and Charles Jones in sociology. And Dave Rosenthal, who was in CAAD, and he went off to Sun Microsystems and did a lot of work there. And I should also mention a friend of mine who we did quite a lot of work with was Mike Garraway, who was in community medicine, became social medicine, and I can't remember what the title of the department now is, but he eventually ended up as professor there. And he did quite a lot of epidemiological work using EMAS in the middle of the night and showed people how you could actually turn around stuff very quickly. After a while, I actually moved into computer science, and I'm going to pick up on four or five things that I found interesting, useful. And I'll say no more than actually mention them. One of the things that I found fascinating was the integrated approach to teaching and systems research and the development of interactive environments for programming, the dreaded interdata systems. I'm not sure that at the end of the day they turned out to be quite as reliable as we hoped they might be. I do remember the interdata. We actually, how many did we have? 8, 9, 10, I think. 10, was it? We certainly had little clusters of file stores, and I think each of those had four kilobyte machines attached to them. And my recollection was we then had a pile of boards, and the interdata engineer, whenever we had a fault, used to come along and just shuffle them and put them back in again. And that seemed to be the technique of trying to make them work. And we discovered all sorts of interesting things, like the fact that some of the microcode stuff was in ROMs that we could easily copy ourselves. And instead of paying 250 quid, we could pay £5 and upgrade stuff very easily and quickly. And that, as a working environment, both from a teaching and research point of view. And in fact, some of the file store stuff there was Paul McClellan developed a new system there and was part of his PhD thesis. We also did quite a lot in program design, which I found very interesting. I'm mentioning here the theory side, complexity, the work that was done by Les Valiant and the CCS work done by Robin Milner. I mentioned both those because I'm just going to have a few words about them later on. But one of the more interesting things was that there was this work on silicon compilers that was evolving. A lot of it led by John Gray, a lot of it done by various people who got excited by that as a concept and a topic. Even Luca Cardelli, who was classified as on the theory side of the business, actually did a lot of work himself on silicon compilers, and that that was, to my mind, very interesting work. And from an architectural point of view, we did quite a lot on RISC technology and thinking about that, and the fact that you could actually demonstrate that you could make an integrated circuit only after a term's teaching, and this was something that in many senses was quite revolutionary as an idea. Now, in fact, some of that actually came via the silicon structures project that was at Caltech, and John Gray went from here on sabbatical for 3 years to lead that. Fortunately, I was able to spend 6 weeks with him very early on in that project, and at that time we came back and we developed the mechanism of actually embedding within one of our favorite programming languages mechanisms of generating the structures. And this proved, you know, really powerful technology. And I made some effort to promote this idea within the UK. And we had various people visiting us from interesting places like Plessy and GEC Hearst Research Centre. In fact, I remember the guy who was in charge of doing silicon design at Hearst Research Centre. He came up here and I took him back to the airport. And he said, "This is really fascinating, interesting stuff." He says, "I only have 3 years before I retire and I'm going to do nothing about it." However, I talked about this at London, and out of that, Ian Page was listening to what I was saying at the time, and he went on to do his silicon compiler stuff at Oxford and founded several companies as a consequence of that. The SRC also fortunately became interested, largely speaking through various efforts that we made to bludgeon them into taking some interest in this, and they actually gave us some funding to actually start an MSc on systems work using silicon compiling technology. And I also went on a sabbatical to GEC in Boreham Wood, and came with me was in fact Graham and Graham Stout. And we spent a year there, and we sort of repeated some of the stuff that had been done in IMP in Pascal. And it was the guy who ran the GEC place was a chap named John Horton, and he was quite fascinated by this, and so was David Leakey, who worked for GEC Telecoms, which is sort of interesting because GEC Telecoms is very much a Masonic-related organization, at least it was then, and therefore Arnold Weinstock would never visit them. So therefore it was regarded as a safe place to do this kind of development. however, the GEC computer people were already down a route of following the VAX kind of tradition, and the idea that microelectronics might actually have a big impact in the way computers were actually made was something that was beyond their imagination at the time. Which brings me on to the fact that John Horton knew Herman Hauser at Cambridge, and he knew that Herman was working with or had founded Acorn Computers. And in those early days, they had loads of money. In fact, they were putting it in biscuit tins. They didn't know what to do with it. And John Horton said to me, you know, you talked about making computers with silicon compilers and what. Would you like to do that for real? So I said, sure. So I moved to Cambridge and joined Acorn Computers. And if you read all the literature and books that's sort of spewing out about that period, you would think that all of the influence and ideas all came from Cambridge University. And I would beg to differ on that, because I think that the small group of people that came down from Edinburgh, which again include Graham and Lee Smith and Richard Cowney, that had really a major impact on Acorn. Because when we went there, they were They were using stuff with a 6502. They were doing gate array stuff, but that was the limit of their vision on how to use this kind of technology. And when I went down there, I had all these nice little slides that I have that, you know, show the development and density of integrated circuits and how they're changing over time, and nice little exponential graphs even then, and sizes and how the changes in sizes, the amount of heat that was generated. And Herman looked at all this stuff, and Herman is no doubt a great visionary, and he just looked at that and he said, I can see the world changing. And he said, right, what we have to do is that we're going to make our own computer. And we'd come there with the notions of silicon compiling and using foundries. And that was a really interesting thing that Herman latched onto and said, this is really what we must do. And that changed fundamentally a lot of the work that was done at Acorn at the time. And various people looked at the architecture, and one of the interesting things was Roger Wilson, who was one of the principal architects. He was from Cambridge. He was a great person who believed in portable machines, so therefore one of the things that he was really interested in was making sure that anything we built was low power, because he thought that that was actually going to be the way computing was going to go. Funnily enough, he seems to have been right. But again, as I said, that was new and relatively novel to all of the people that were at Acorn at the time, and the vast majority of people there were from Cambridge University. A couple of things to... So we made some contribution in terms of the architecture. The one thing that we did do is that when Roger was looking at the architecture, they were actually thinking of building something with a 20-bit address space, and we said, no, it has to be at least 32 bits. And that change was made, and if that influence hadn't been there, we would have, I'm not sure Acorn or ARM subsequently, if they'd kept that initial 20-bit idea, would have done quite so well out of it. I wrote down there a little item about metastability, because when we did arrive there, they were using gate arrays, and there was a gate array that was in a machine called an Electron. And funnily enough, it had a circuit in it that had metastability, and no one there at that time knew anything about metastability. And we were able to tell them what metastability was and how to get around it. And as a consequence of that, they were able to redesign that gate array and bring it out nearly in time for the Christmas market. But they were struggling with that as an idea. The final point I've got down there about silicon structures, and this is coming back to ARM and to John Gray. John and I were talking at the time because he was working at ES2, which was essentially a gate array company, but basically working with compiling type technology using gate arrays. And we discussed how it would be very interesting, because with the ARM that we had built then had a very small die size, that maybe we could put the ARM on the chip and put the gate array of stuff around it, and we could then use that to build various types of customized circuits. And that actually became the business plan for ARM. And that was before Robin Saxby joined ARM. So that basic idea went into founding what ARM was going to do. Now, ARM was then lucky in one way, or lucky in two ways, because Robin Saxby is actually a very good salesman. But at the same time, mobile phones were beginning to become much more interesting, i.e. they weren't the large brick and you didn't have to carry around a suitcase with a battery in it. They were becoming much more like we see now. And the notion of actually having a low-powered central processing unit on a die with stuff around it became very attractive to the industry of mobile phones. And in fact, I think that the ARM as a processor is still in something like 80% of mobile phones. And it's made by a large number of people. So that whole idea of having a foundry, being able to factor that out to various kind of processors, building a low energy device. Most of that idea all came from Edinburgh and not from Cambridge. So I was there some while, and after that, various things happened, and I eventually left that, and I became more interested in using modelling and simulation, and went back to doing some, social engineering. Although what I was doing was building simulation systems, and I got a contract to do a simulation system for an acute hospital in order to improve the management system, and we needed to do this quickly. And we chose to use a variant of ML known as OCaml, which is implemented by the people in Paris, a chap named there, Xavier Leroy, smart cookie. And this was a very efficient compiler, and it produces code that's pretty near on to C++. But you have all the advantages of using something like the powerful structures and typing that you get from a functional language. And the underlying model that we're using was in fact based on the CCS stuff. So we mapped onto that simple ideas of actually having a large number of active agents communicating. And onto that you map the actual environment that you're dealing with. And we built three models. One was a nursing care, one was acute hospital, and the final one was a criminal justice system model. And in fact, they're still using that. And that is, if you like, the front page of the system. And you probably can't see all of the numbers there, but that actually covers the activity of the whole of the English criminal justice system. Now you might ask, since they had a model like this, why are they still having the problems they're having? Well, part of the problem is that they don't actually understand how to use this kind of thing any more than they understand anything else they're doing. However, there are people there that do like it, and they use it pretty actively, and as I understand it, they're running simulations and explorations using this stuff daily. I just thought you might like to see a further little bit of output. There's a little bar graph there. Because one of the things it does, it creates a profile of criminal activity on a day-by-day basis. So that every day, there are various number of criminal activities that take place. And the police wander around within the model, apprehending and detecting things and things like that. But in fact, the interesting thing is that if you look here, we've just got a list of the typical or the categorization of offences that that take place on a daily basis, and this one here, that's summary motoring offences, so that it dominates the criminal system. The number of people who do have motoring offences. And then other summary offences, and the ones that become serious by comparison are all these little ones at the bottom, and this one here is theft. So, how am I doing on time, Graham? Okay, just finally, what I'm doing now is that I'm a technology partner in a private equity fund. And I sit there as their technology speculator, and as one of my colleagues there describes me as a white space expert, i.e. somebody who wants to actually fill the business up with new things, whereas in fact most of their time they're actually on mergers and acquisition. And I help them with that in some simulation and modeling as in terms of deciding what mergers and acquisition to do. But part of what I also do is that I end up reviewing various projects that they have, because their idea is that software is a source of innovation and efficiency. So I go and see how efficient and how innovative lots of these software projects are. And I'm sorry to say that, in fact, they seem to be highly innovative and highly inefficient. And I've reviewed probably about 30 projects over the last 5 years. And it's a bit like doing CS4 project review. And and what you find is that the fundamentals of abstraction and typing and operations are not understood at all. There's nobody who understands what's easy and hard, and that what's been implemented is often dominated by the first language that the person was taught by. They have no idea about measurement or testing, and to my mind, there's something like 4 to 10 times less effective than they could be. So I wonder, just seeing this, you know, a number of maybe a couple of hundred, 300 odd people who supposedly been trained in computer engineering and computer science, where they were trained. And I haven't actually encountered any from Edinburgh amongst this group. I'm left with then having to do some intervention and try and tidy things up a bit. So that's where I am now, and that's, to my mind, me being able to use the background of experience that I gained when I was here and the work that was done here by a large number of people. And I would just re-emphasize that some of that stuff, despite what people have said, is getting out into the world in general, and some of it is being used, not as much as there should be. Thank you.